You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer, and I'm sitting here in my home office in Portland, Oregon. And my guest is across the country. I think he's in Connecticut today, not Florida, as best I can tell from the environment around him. And we grew up less than 15, probably even less than 10 miles from each other. Granted, there's probably about 15 years or so difference in our age, but here's another similarity. We both started our professional careers working in the theater industry. And while I stuck around in that industry for 13 years, my guest, Brian Kurtz, quickly discovered that he was destined to go down a different path. And he got headhunted into a fascinating world of publishing and direct response marketing. But the job that he landed in wasn't just any job. And I don't think he knew this at the time, but this job put him squarely at the center of activity for many of the most important health and financial and business experts of the day, not to mention a who's who of, I think, what Brian refers to as the Mount Rushmore of many of the marketers who are considered icons in the direct response field today. And I guess after a few decades of being surrounded by folks like this, some stuff starts to rub off on you. So for the past year and a half, I've actually had the privilege to be part of his family in his Titans Accelerator group. I get up bright and early on Thursday mornings. It's 7:30 at my time if I want to hang out with Brian and have coffee with him, as it were. And so I'm incredibly honored that he agreed to hang out and chat with me today. So Brian, welcome.
Thanks, David. You know, I kind of like had to beg you a little bit. People in the accelerator group were saying, oh, I did an interview with David. I said, David, what am I, chopped liver? You know, of course I'll do an interview with you. I find you to be one of the most engaging people in Titans Accelerator is a virtual mastermind of 250 of the most heart-centered marketers. And I mean, saying heart-centered marketers, you'd think that that's an oxymoron, but it's not. When you go out and find people who just really care about the marketing they put out there, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit in terms of agencies and stuff. But David, you're one of the most, not only the most, one of the smartest people in the group, but you're always so willing to lend your expertise, and especially when people are on hot seats, which is a really tough time for people in a mastermind. You know, they're sitting on a hot seat, they're like spilling their guts about how terrible their business is or how much help they need. And David is, I don't remember a hot seat where David didn't raise his hand.
It happens sometimes.
You know, you know, it's just great because you always have great things to add. And then you get other people, you know, the idea of putting a great idea out is that other people can build on your idea. And it always happens with you. So, you know, I'm honored to be here. I'm so pleased you asked me. And, you know, it was interesting the way you described my career, too, about, you know, I worked at Samuel French for 6 months, which is the
publisher. So you were in publishing the entire time.
All entire time. But I was doing amateur leasing. So I was, you know, I was with the high school teachers in, you know, in Plano, Texas, who want to put on The Odd Couple. And I have to send them a bill for the royalties for Neil Simon. That was like the job. It was like a collection agency.
Yeah.
So not a glamorous job at all, but in the theater business. And I got tickets to plays once in a while and off-Broadway shows and stuff like that. But man, when I landed at Boardroom, you know, you're right. I think the term is I stepped in shit, which is a good thing. You know, I just stepped right into the middle of, I hadn't thought about it that way. And I did not know what I had stepped into. What I did know I stepped into was I saw the guy who owned the company, Marty Edelstein. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, this guy is like, I wasn't like him, but I saw something in him. He was entrepreneurial. He he was family oriented, but he didn't spend time with his family, you know, because he was always at work, but he knew about family.
Yeah.
And he knew, and his values, you know, he was always a good, better, best, never let it rest. So the good is better and the better best. That was on his stationery. And I said, you know, if I can follow this guy, and I know it's going to lead me somewhere good. And he was always looking for the truth. And he was so curious and so inquisitive about the world and around him. And then when it came to marketing, you know, I thought I might want to be in marketing, but I thought I was going to be an editorial guy. I wanted to write. And so when he said I had a nose for marketing after I was at Boardroom for like a year and a half, and my boss left it, and someone left in the editorial department, and he said, you know, I think you should stay in marketing. You've got a nose for this. And I said, I know I have a big nose, but you know, sometimes you have to, and I'm 23 years old, and here's the owner of the company. How am I gonna not agree with him? Right. And he was right. I mean, not that I had a big nose for marketing, but I loved it. I mean, I just fell in love with the idea that you can do advertising and marketing that gets an ROI, that has to be measurable and accountable. And that was a thrill for me. And I just was hooked very, very quickly. And I came out of the list business. So,
yeah,
you know, and list sounds unglamorous, but I think it's the most glamorous because list, that's your audience. That's your media. That's your, you know, who you want to get to buy your products or services. And it's right in the middle of what you do, David, in terms of the agencies you service and how they, you know, service their clients. It's all about finding the right audience. I think it's more important than an offer. It's more important than the creative and the messaging. Because if you have your audience dialed in, your offer can be mediocre and your copy can be mediocre and you'll get some orders. It won't be great, but the opposite's not true. If you have the wrong audience, you can put the best copy and the best offer against that. You'll get zero orders. So yeah. It's really, I learned that early on. And so I was never embarrassed to say I'm a list guy. But I was in the middle. And then the copywriters are just amazing that I met. And that was.
So I want to pause for a moment because you actually tell the story and you make a really good argument for the sexiness of being a list guy in your book, Over Deliver, which we'll make sure people learn about. But I want to revisit a couple of things that you just talked about. You talked about in Titans Accelerator, somebody being on a hot seat and sharing ideas, and ideas beget other ideas, we beget other ideas. And then a few minutes after that, because that was a long soliloquy there, right? It was six or 7 minutes. Good for you.
I'm known for those.
you mentioned Marty, and I want to share a little story. Here in Portland, and this happens in other communities around the country. We have what are known as little libraries. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. Where like people have these little shelves that are out on the street in front of their house. And you can take a book, you can leave a book.
Yeah. We have them at the beach here.
Yeah. So I was walking around my neighborhood one day and I found this really interesting book long before you and I met that I grabbed and I thought, oh, I'm gonna read this thing. And I pulled it out and I brought it home and I started reading it and I put it down. And then I was reintroduced to it the first time I heard Marty's name. And I wonder if you know what book I'm referring to.
Oh, wow. The iPower book. Yes.
So this is actually the thing that I was keen to talk to you about and what prompted me to think, okay, there's a lot of directions we can go with this book, which is really about internally at Boardroom, how you guys shared ideas with each other, a system that was created around sharing ideas, and I think probably influenced a little bit of the culture in the organization.
Yeah, you know, Marty made a big deal about it because he invented it, but what he invented was just a glorified suggestion hat system. But the key was keeping it going, because just like, you know, on a diet, you know, people don't have compliance to stay on a diet. It's all about keeping a system going. And he got it in a system where you had to give ideas. And, you know, then he said, we're going to have quotas of ideas per person. Now, every idea doesn't have to be a big idea. In fact, one of mine was, I thought that the toilet paper should come out from underneath as far instead of over. Because I think
oh, you're one of those. Okay. I said, oh, you're one of those.
A better presentation, right? But you know what? The idea and the book with the book, and it's funny, I guess that's the book you wanted to talk about. And I have read it cover to cover. So I don't read books cover to cover, but that one I did because I'm in it in a few places. And it was a system where we had, you know, these places, we had these little chits, and they were two part chits. And so you write it and you put the original into the hat and you keep the receipt because you're going to have to discuss it with your iPower group in the near future. And we had the company in iPower groups. We had them first by department. So marketing people were in one group and the editorial people were another, the accounting people were another. And then we mixed it up occasionally. So you were in a group of like 6 or 7 people and you had your ideas for the month and you had to like say them. And then everybody in the room rated them. And it was like so simple, but it was like an A idea got $5, a B idea got $2. And like an idea that didn't get rated, you know, we put it in a like a parking garage of sorts, you know, where we put it to bring back at a future date, and you had to keep track of it. And what happened was the reason why and it was so simple. What we do is we had a guy in the company who would walk around at the end of the month with cash, and you know, I had 12 A ideas and 8 B ideas, and he'd hand me cash of like $87. And you know, yeah, you could say it's a bit of a bribe, sure. But you know what? It was so simple, and yet, and of course, you had to have 2 ideas a week, which is not a lot. You know, people were complaining, oh, I don't want to have a quota of ideas. You know, 2 a week. I mean, and one of them could be about the toilet paper. I mean, come on. So we kept it lively, and that did add to the corporate culture for sure. I mean, it was a quirky company, but a hardworking company because Marty was like, you know, I mean, there's a quote on the back of his business card. I can read it off my wall. I have his business card on my wall. It's the master in the art of living makes little distinction between his work and his play, his labor and his leisure, his mood, his mind and his body, his education and his recreation, his love and his religion. He hardly knows which is which. I'm a bit closer. Hold on. He simply pursues his vision of excellence in whatever he does, leaving others to decide whether he is working or playing. To him, he is always doing both. And it's a Zen Buddhist text of some sort.
Yeah.
That was his life. And whenever I say to my wife, you know, my work is my play, I'm serious. You know, it was, and it's a higher percentage now than it was when I worked at Boardroom. You know, since I've been on my own, I've made it a much higher percentage because, you know, I'm getting on in years and I want to keep teaching and I want to do what I want to do and not do the things I don't do well and not do the things that I hate to do. And I want to hang out with people that I want to hang out with, like you. So I don't want to hang out with people that I don't want to hang around with anymore. And, you know, when you're beholden to other people, you know, you will hang out with them. But to basically... the iPower system, we did these seminars locally. We sent a guy around the country. It was like Johnny Appleseed more than anything else. We never made it a big business, but it was so Marty. And it was really, and you hit it on the head. It really created a corporate culture. It made us a learning organization. And there's a book called The Learning Organization. Mm-hmm. And he followed that. Also, he was really into Japanese business in the 80s when the Japanese were cleaning our clock in business. And he used to, you know, it comes from Kaizen, you know, continuous improvement. And he was like really into, he went to Peter Drucker. That's how he got iPower. He went to Peter Drucker, the management consultant, and they're sitting together. He was interviewing him for an article, and then they just sitting together. And Peter says, how can I help you with your business? And Marty said, you know, our meetings suck. Like every meeting I go to is terrible. And he goes, well, start every meeting and have everybody bring two ideas. And that was the whole thing where iPower started. And then we ended up with the cash prizes and all the other stuff. I think someone was like, after we were doing it for like 2 years, they said, oh, the IRS is going to come after us with all that cash. And everybody wants to like throw a wrench into a good thing, you know? But it was, and then the iPower money had to go on our paychecks and they took tax out of it. So that kind of put a damper on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Marty would ask questions of people like Peter Drucker, and he studied Deming, you know, mm-hmm. continuous improvement. And, you know, we're a small entrepreneurial company, you know, we're a publishing company. When I got there in 1981, we were probably doing $3 to $5 million in revenue, maybe a little more. I mean, it's bigger than $3 to $5 million is a lot smaller. It's a lot different being $3 to $5 million in 1981. But, you know, we were able to take it in the mid 2000s, after Marty had a stroke, actually, to like $150 million. And I think part of it was due to iPower. Marty would say it was all due to iPower, but, you know, I let him have that, you know. But, you know, people were always thinking in the company. You know, there was a cartoon from New Yorker on one of the walls. He had the walls were covered with his artwork, and he bought all these. Every piece of art he bought had to have a meaning. It had to have like a, it had to have a lesson in life. Every piece of art he ever bought, he wouldn't buy it. And he bought some Warhols. He bought some amazing art from new artists. Gene Schwartz was his buddy, and mm-hmm. Gene Schwartz, the great copywriter and author of Breakthrough Advertising, he used to take him on art, and Marty would buy stuff that Gene would never buy, but it had a lesson in life for Marty, and he paid a lot of money for him because he found out afterwards it was a Mapplethorpe or a Warhol, mm-hmm. and Marty didn't think of the price. He just wanted the lesson on his wall. And there was this one New Yorker cartoon. It was not I know exactly where it was in the office. And there was a guy, he was handing something, I guess, to his boss or something. And all it said on the piece of paper was think. And then the guy says, what's that for? You know, it was like so simple. Like, and so Marty wanted everybody in the company from top to bottom to always be thinking. And, you know, look, the clerks and the people at the low end, they're not taking the business home with them like I was and Marty was. But, you know, if you get them to think about it and kind of work their work into their play and their recreation somehow. So when they're at a Thanksgiving dinner and they're bragging about their company and all of that, that's a pride thing. And it comes back in spades. You can't, it's not like an ROI that you can basically calculate, but the fact that we had, I mean, our staff at Boardroom, I mean, some of them probably should have been fired, but you know, we had more people with 10-year, longevity than any mm-hmm. company of that size. We had 80 employees. I would at our height, or at our height, we had more than that, but we were usually at 75, 80 employees. And I would say more than half were there for at least 5 years. And certainly, you know, 30% or 40% were probably there for 10 years. And we had people that I stayed for 34 years. I mean, you know, but I had equity and I was in a little different position, but it was a great place to learn and grow. And it really was a great ride for me and everybody who worked for me and worked for the company.
So you talk a little bit about the integration and the quote on the back of the card that I think speaks to this a lot as well in terms of integration of personal and the things that that you personally can extract from any experience and a little play with work and all of that. And I wanted to understand how this company did something that so few businesses, at least in the small business space that I'm in, and I think you pointed out even more clearly in enterprise businesses, they separate marketing from the day-to-day activity. And it sounds like the way that you described the engagement of the employees, that there was a broader understanding and consideration of here's what we're here to do. Here are the activities we engage in. Here's how marketing that is very much integrated with a lot of the operational aspects of your business. You were publishing newsletters
and books, right?
And you would then have people you would bring in to participate in the marketing who would be very much engaged with the content that you were selling in order to market it. And there probably was other stuff that I don't know about. And I wonder if you can speak to sort of that aspect of the business.
Yeah, that's a great angle, David. So there are companies that do this, but I think we did it our own unique way. And the thing that I treasured at the company, because we also had some turf wars, you know, the editors didn't like the way we marketed and the marketers thought the editors were too conservative and all of that. So we had those battles.
Yeah.
But the overall, you said there's an overall umbrella in the company that said, you know, if I used to walk around the company and say, we're a marketing organization. Yes, we need good editorial because, you know, the marketers sell the first subscription or the first book. It's the editors that sell the renewals and the repeat business, because if the first product is crap, you're not going to sell a second product to them. It's very simple. So I didn't think that the marketers could sell renewals as well as the editors could. So I was kind of trying to bring them along for the ride. But I said, you have to let me do what I need to do for that first order, but I will keep the second order in mind. I will keep the editorial in mind, but I have to shock the people a little bit. You know, I mean, they hated some of our headlines in our publications, when carrots can cure cancer. Well, there are some angles to that. We had to make the headline, you know, much more exciting than the actual thing that backs it up. But we were able to back it up that there was a study that there was a cancer, there was a decrease in cancer in a certain group that was tested that had a lot high to beta carotene was a big thing that they were. So it was like, it wasn't like carrots cure cancer, but you know, we were playing a little loose with the language, but we could back up what we were saying. And so that was always like, we were always at odds with editorial on that. But besides that, it was always when you say getting involved at, you know, that when no one felt in their job that they were just doing their job for a paycheck and food. And the outsiders, we made them feel the same way. So for instance, our copywriters, we used to go outside, we hired the best copywriters. And I know you have a lot of agency people listening to this. And you know, if they do have copywriters in their agency, you know, I always tell them, be careful, because if they're really good, they're gonna leave you, because they can make a lot more money on their own than they can getting a salary, because we paid our copywriters royalties and percentages. And in fact, there were some years the copywriter, if they were an employee, they made more than me and Marty because of the royalties. The copywriter was so important to us. So, but the copywriter would come in and meet with us. They meet with the marketers, the editors. They would sit down with us because they didn't want to just write for food. They wanted to basically get into the, you know, who's the customer. And we had to like really go into it in such detail. Like we had to like put a person together for them, because the best copywriters write to one person, even though we send out millions of mailing pieces. And the idea of writing to one of a million, but you have an idea of who the one is, that's why the copywriters got the big bucks, because they understood that. But it didn't happen by magic. Yeah. They came in, they got on the phone with customer service. You know, that was a big thing. You know, that was something we talked about before you turned the recording on.
Yeah.
That, you know, an agency, I don't think an agent, maybe you have some agencies who are enlightened to this, but I hope they realize, and I hope everybody listening realizes, that customer service and fulfillment are marketing functions. I devoted a whole chapter of my book to that. You know, if you think that that's just the icing on the cake and we keep them happy and that'll be great. No, you know, when someone calls complaining, I tell the story, this is a good story, but, you know, and it's true, you know, in the 80s, I used to stay late at the office. So I'd be sitting at my desk, 8 o'clock at night, no automated attendant. So the phone's ringing and ringing. I'm the only person in the office. I pick it up. And it was always an unhappy customer at 8 o'clock at night. And they tell me what they got the book and the book was damaged, or the stuff that we said in our promotion wasn't in the book on the page that we said it was going to be on. And I would just calm them down. And it was a game for me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm going to make sure when I get off the phone with this person, they're not only going to be satisfied, but they're going to be a lifelong customer. And that's the whole thing about direct response marketing, is that it's the lifetime value of the customer. It's not the first sale of the customer. So when I got off the phone, I mean, maybe it took me like, I had to send him like 3 books in the mail, and I packed it up that night. I packed it up and put it in the mailroom. I sent the person 3 books. I said, I'm sorry that we missed that. And I know I made a customer for life, but it was just the, just doing that. It's not, yeah, we lost money on that customer. Sure. That day. Mm-hmm. That's not the point. The point is that you're in the psyche of the customer. And even if they calling to praise us and want more information, that was a great opportunity to talk to them. If they were just asking about, where do I send something? I said, oh, and you should send it here. But do you know about our other book? So when you talk about customer service and fulfillment, those are the best people to upsell and cross-sell. You have to do it in a correct way. But giving it to a boiler room to do it, as opposed to an employee of the company who believes in the mission of what we're doing, you know, you're losing the opportunity of having like a salesperson out of a customer service person. And they're not really hard selling when they're just being competent, you know, and they're saying what they believe. And so all of that is marketing. And if I think it could go to the agency side, it could go to the copywriter side, it could go to media buying, everything. You really, there's so much opportunity inside the company to create all of these special moments with customers, as opposed to, you know, we do the marketing, you deliver that, and then we see what happens. No, we see what happens, but we participate in every step of the way.
One of the things that I'm curious to know, and this is, I think, a lesson for anybody listening, the what you did at 8 o'clock at night when you were calming that customer down and earning them, earning a customer for life out of that situation, is that's great. If the business owner does that, if you do it as, you know, and you take the initiative to do something, but so many businesses miss the opportunity to systematize or institutionalize that kind of thing. And so I'm curious, at first, I don't know, did you, but the way that I think we've talked probably on accelerator calls about the way that catalog call centers used to operate, which is, you know, you call in, you buy something on page so-and-so, and then they continue to ask you, oh, well, if you're getting that, we also have a special on this page, and you just keep doing that routinely, right? There's a script, there's a system.
Yeah.
Is there a system for solving problems and winning customers for life?
Yeah. I mean, it's not simple. If you have a huge company, you might be outsourced. See, the thing is, people say, well, that's something we're going to just outsource to a company that does that. But are you monitoring it? I mean, that's step one. You've got to listen in just to make sure that they're not embarrassing your company, you know, that they're not doing something that sounds like they don't do bait and switch, you know. And so if they're selling the customer on something that they, you know, would help them and would assist them from the product with the product that they already bought, that's great. But if they're buying shoes to then sell them a parka immediately, if it's Land's End or L.L. Bean, that's not what we're talking about here. So, but that's got to be dictated by the company. If you let a telemarketing company or a customer service outsourced company just dictate everything for you, then there's going to end up being a disconnect at some point. But once you have the rules and the scripts, you really can automate it quite a bit. In fact, we went in the infomercial business for a bunch of years, and it took our company. We went from 70 million in revenue in 1 year to 148 million.
Wow.
Because, and it was just the incremental was just in infomercial. We got a winning show and we milked it heavily. But what happened was we were very conscious of the telemarketers that were picking up the phone, because a lot of the infomercials, what they did, they'd sell a low price product and then they'd sell you everything under the sun. That's how they paid for the media, and they able to make a profit on the sale. Like, so, but I saw what they were doing, because I was sitting at home. I tell the story in my book, Over Deliver. I'm sitting at home. I know exactly when it was, February of 2004, snowy night. I couldn't sleep. I came down watching an infomercial, and I saw, and so this guy is selling a book. It was Kevin Trudeau. I'm sure people have seen him. Amazing salesman. You know, What They Don't Want You to Know, which was a line that we used in our direct mail in the 1980s. This is 2004. And I said, and he's selling a book for $29.95. I said, how can he be paying for a 28 and a half minute infomercial, even if it's in the middle of the night, and sell a single book, even though he's selling it like crazy, selling the crap out of it? And so I called the number and I got on the phone and I realized how he did it. He did it because they sold me the audio of the book. Then they sold me the transcription of the, they sent me workbooks for the book. Then they sent me a diet plan. Then they sent me a travel club. Then they sent me an Amex, you know, an offer for an Amex credit card. So they just like, they would go on and on and on. And their average order on the $29 order ended up being, I don't know, 112. I said, I got the model now. I could do that without, you know, I've said this in some places, I don't say it all the time, but I had to decriminalize his offer because he ended up going to jail because he was saying things in the infomercial that just weren't true. So I had to decriminalize my offer, which is already decriminalized. And then I created the upsells were all related to the initial product. Mm-hmm. So yes, my average order on a $39 book was $72. Not as good, but really good, because my numbers ended up being very, very good. And we made a lot of money. Did I make as much money as Kevin Trudeau did? No. Did I go to jail? No. And was it consistent and congruent with what we wanted to do? And I only learned that by seeing how somebody did it to the max, and then you adjust to what you want to do. I've always said you can titrate up and down based on the scaling of, you know, I want to sell really aggressively and sell as much as I want. Or I only want to send one, I want to sell one upsell that's related and I'm happy with that and everything in between. And so, you know, you don't have to do it like everybody else. And so, I mean, it's such a simple thing to say, but you have to do it for what your company represents, how you want it represented in the marketplace. And you need to make the rules yourself. You don't allow a telemarketing person or an outside consultant or anything like that to devise your system. And the only way to do that is to have your ear to the ground, or in this case, your ear on the phone, listening to what they're saying. Are they going off? If you give them a script, are they going off script? So I'm getting into the granular, but you can see that there's a 30,000 foot view of all of this, which is you have to look at your company as a whole, even while you're outsourcing all of these other things. And if you're an agency, there's no reason why you can't be that, you know, we talked about this before you turned the recording on, you know, that you have to be the trusted advisor with your client and not just be a media buyer and not just be the website creator. Or, you know, the more you can do, the more you can charge, the more you can be a partner, you know, but you got to walk the walk of being a partner. I'm going to be their partner. I'm going to buy Facebook ads. Well, I mean, that's a kind of a partner. You're buying their Facebook ads. But what if you could, you know, have a creative person that you hire in the agency that has become an expert in creating Facebook ads, and you're able to create the ad? I mean, agents, I know how agencies work. They want to be full service, soup to nuts. I never work with agencies because I always felt buying a la carte, I'd get the best of each thing. And today, you know, the way the world is, just because I say this often, you know, advertising opportunities are infinite right now. Yeah. So the person who's a YouTube expert may not be the best person to buy your a Facebook advertising, mm-hmm. but in an agency that does a lot of social media, it might be. So the agencies have to protect against that. So I would tell an agency that you should specialize, even though maybe you don't think you have to, but I think you have to. And the agencies that are smart are going to specialize, and they're going to go a mile deep in each specialty. And they'll have somebody who will head each of those areas up. Before it was like, you head up creative, you head up media, you head up account supervision. Now you head up Facebook and Instagram, you head up YouTube, you head up Google AdWords. So it's a little different game, I think, because I know when I go out and we do it in Titans Accelerator, I want to get the YouTube expert. I want to get the agency expert. I want to get the, what did I have recently? I had the...
I think we had a TikTok ads expert recently.
We did. A TikTok guy that basically has branched off to be just... Because he knows that if he can differentiate from all the other social media buyers. And there are some differences, not ridiculous differences, but there are differences. Mm-hmm. And he nuanced it into an agency for TikTok. Now, you know, that might be too narrow for some of the people listening to this, but because that's who you're going to be competing with if you're going to buy TikTok. And you know what? The client always has the opportunity to buy a la carte.
Yeah.
And a la carte, I don't know that it's more expensive. You know, a la carte's more expensive than a price fixed dinner in most cases. But in if you compare an agency to buying the best of the best in each area, you'll spend more on the front end probably, but for lifetime value and for the long term. And that's what I'd say to your agencies that are listening, you know, think about that and how can you become priceless in all the different pillars that you're selling to your clients.
I think I would argue that the real value in any of these equations, whether you're piecemealing the you know tactical fulfillment or it's coming, you know, from one place, is that there needs to be a central strategic plan. And that's, I think, what is missing in many organizations, particularly organizations that don't know enough about the marketing that they feel like, oh, we should outsource it to an expert.
Right.
Well, if they're outsourcing it to an expert and they're going to a tactician rather than a strategist, they're already shooting themselves in the foot. And that's, I think, a huge challenge in this world. And it's the way that we've been taught how to buy and sell marketing and advertising in general.
I think your book is exactly about that. You know, it's all about the strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you touch on this, and I haven't read your book yet. I just was sent it by somebody that we both know, and I can't wait to look at it. But the, you know, tactics are important. I say to people when they come to my masterminds, I'm not going to give you tactics. What I'm going to give you, I'm going to give you as much watts as I can. I call it, what's a watt? A watt is Amazon marketing. A watt is Facebook advertising. A watt is direct mail. Mm-hmm. A watt is Google AdWords. I'm going to bring the expert of experts on the watts. You listen to them. You decide how you might be able to use that in your business. You don't have to say yes to everything. That's crazy. You know, Perry Marshall talks about Maze 2.0, which is a fantastic concept, which is basically, you know, you want to pick a variety, but you don't want to do more than like four, he says, four different media in four of the quadrants. And the quadrants are created by having one quadrant, one axis that says online at the top, offline at the bottom. And then the cross axis is the horizontal axis is live and recorded. You can put any media in one of those four boxes. So a live and recorded would be a live webinar or a live cast. A recorded offline would be a book, whether it's written or not. It's recorded because it's recorded. And you only have to pick. And if you pick one in each of the quadrants, I say two in each quadrant, then it looks like you're everywhere, but you're not saying yes to everything. And everything can't be a shiny object that you can go after. So I think that the beauty of buying media and looking at what's in the world is that's why I always say I want to go to the number one. If I'm going to go into Facebook advertising, I don't want to do it with an amateur. And how do you decide who's not an amateur? You got to do diligence on these people. You got to do some diligence on these people. And it's more than just getting references. It's about, you know, let's look at their success rate. Let's look at, you know, and you ask the right ask the right questions, you know, how much you're paying. And that's why it's all about direct marketing for me. Because if you can't do it on a measurable basis, it doesn't exist for me. You know, what does the CFO say? You know, that can be measured, can be
managed.
Managed, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, Brian, I want to make sure that our listeners know where they can learn more about you and hear the full stories or read the full stories that you've just given them a glimpse of in your most recent book, Over Deliver. Where can they find out more?
Well, they can go to briankurtz.net, briankurtz.net. That's my website, but my website is not, you know, it's not splashy. I saw a guy on a webinar yesterday talking about he remodels your website.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like on wow stuff. And I'm like, but there's no direct response there, you know? I mean, there was some things for, you know, free bonuses and vacations, but it wasn't even on the above the fold. What's above the fold on my website is basically you opt in for an interview that I did with Perry Marshall for an hour and a half on three marketing things that I talk about the one of those is the infomercial that I mentioned today. One is a little bit about the list business and how I became, I think, the best list manager in the world.
That's what people said about you, at least.
They did, and the competition wasn't that stiff, so that was part of it. So I have this interview. So to get the interview, you just sign up, and what you're signing up for is not anything that's going to clutter your inbox. You get my weekly blog every Sunday, and you can go to my blog page for free and look at all my past blogs. And there's some repetition in there, of course. I've been doing it for 8 years, but I try to tell stories in my blog. I don't sell stuff in my blog except my own stuff. It's all educational. If I sell someone else's thing, it's not done as an affiliate. It's done. And again, this is important for people to hear. It's not that I'm bragging. It's that that's congruent with who I am and what I want to do as far as selling stuff. You and I were lamenting before we turned the recording on that we're both directors of sales prevention sometimes because we give and give and give. And, you know, we don't ask for the order often enough, maybe. And I'd rather be there than just selling all the time. Some people can sell all the time, be very successful at it. That's a perfect model. I'm not saying that's bad. But what's congruent with my model is that if I sell someone else's thing that's educational for marketing, they could only sell it to my audience if they're paying an affiliate commission, that they give that affiliate commission as a discount to my audience. So if they're giving a 50% discount on whatever they're selling, a course or something, then they have to sell it to my people at a 50% discount. I don't take the money. There are some people that won't do that deal. That they would have to pay me normally, but if I give the discount, then they feel like it's cheapening their product. No, it's not. We tell them up front. We say, I would be getting a 50% commission here. I'm not taking it. We're putting that to you. It's like we're giving, it sounds like I'm a wholesale guy. We're putting that discount on to you, right? But I couldn't believe the people that would say no to that because it takes me a while to approve them to be able to sell what they're selling. I never understood that, but you know what, be that as it may. So being on my list, being a part of my online family is not a drudgery and you can unsubscribe at any time. Now, if you want to get my book, you do have to pay for it, but what you get when you get my book is you get bonuses that are worth much more than my book. You title a book over deliver, you need to over deliver on the bonuses. And the bonuses are incredible. You go to overdeliverbook.com. You go there, you don't go to Amazon directly. You go to overdeliverbook.com. There's buttons there. It'll send you to Amazon, Barnes & Noble or Indie Books. You can go to any one of the three. You go off on a separate window, you buy the book, and then you come back with your receipt. You put the order number in and you get access to like two PDFs of two of the greatest direct books on direct mail by two of my mentors, Dick Benson and Gordon Grossman. There's a swipe file by Dan Kennedy. If you know who Dan Kennedy is, he did it exclusively for an event we did together. There's Ben Savenga, who's one of the best copywriters of all time. He has Ben Savenga book bullets, which are all online, but I put them in a PDF so it's easy for people to access in a PDF. There's Jay Abraham. There's 19 keynote speeches that Jay Abraham gave. Jay Abraham is a marketing guru of sorts. He's been in my life since the mid-1980s. He wrote the foreword to my book, and I'm very, very honored that he did. So it's a great site that you'll get access to all this stuff. You can print a lot of it. It's PDF, a lot of it. So overdeliverbook.com if you want to buy my book and get all the bonuses. But all you have to do is go to briankurtz.net. A lot of free content there. I hope anybody in David's world that wants to join my world, I'd be honored to have you.
It's a fun world to be in, and I'm super appreciative of you making time to share some of your experience and wisdom and those who influenced you as well. And I want to encourage everybody to take you up on the offer to join your online family because it's a fun place to be.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate you, and hopefully I'll see you on our Titans Accelerator call tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And I love having you in the group. It's just been a great, I really haven't met in person, but you know, I feel like I know you, and I feel like you're a good friend, and I appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you as well. Folks, this has been another episode of More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to the conversation you just heard, and I know you do, please share this with them. Until next time, I'm David Baer. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.